Yeah, thanks, Kelly. Hi, I'm Sam. I'm an addict.
Hi, Sam.
Thanks for inviting me, Kelly. Thanks to the committee. Welcome to anyone new, anyone in your first few meetings. Yeah, it feels quite sort of surreal being here. I'm really honoured to ask. I remember coming to this meeting, you know, when I was first coming to meetings. I know what a strong tradition it has, so it's really honoured to be asked. And yeah, I was just kind of thinking during the readings, you know, gosh, how did I get here? You know, how did I become a drug addict in the first place? And, you know, how did I get clean? Sitting here right now is, you know, when I was a kid, I never thought I'd be here right now. And, you know, it's quite a surreal feeling. I really love my life today. In a way, I'm kind of glad I was a drug addict, so I got to recover, you know, if that makes any sense. I remember when I first met Kelly. We met at this, just to give you some context, you know, this November I'll be 3 years clean. Thank you. Thanks to all you guys. But you know, I first started coming to meetings around sort of 18 months before that, and there was this sort of late night 12-step meeting, you know, like 10 p.m. in Islington, I think, where we met, and I think there's a few other faces in this meeting from that meeting, and it was kind of emblematic of kind of, you know, where I was, kind of my using wasn't working. I couldn't really commit to using. I kind of wanted the cuddle, and because I knew I got unconditional acceptance in NA, and I sort of that was the only place it would have me. So I kind of, you know, I sort of found a home there, but I was sort of unwilling to do the work. I was unwilling to sort of surrender completely. And I was sort of stuck in that sort of limbo land late at night on a Saturday, nowhere else to go. And kind of reflecting on that moment, I never want to lose sight of what a gift it is to be clean today. You know, everything I have in my life is, I owe to being clean and to this program. It really is a miracle. And yeah, I kind of count my blessings. You know, sometimes, you know, I understand my step one more in reverse. You know, the more I experience what it's like to live clean and connected to a power greater than myself, the more I realize how powerless I truly was. You know, back then, you know, when I was using and even before I picked up a drug. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think, you know, this phase of my recovery, this sort of, you know, I would say that the last 6 months, it's really, I've really reconnected with the basics in a more profound way, but the same principles that I learned when I first came in are the same things that, you know, I need today now, about just, you know, keeping it in the day, trusting a higher power, you know, just doing the next right thing. This sort of last 6 months of my recovery, it's really been, I found, it's about just consistently doing the little things right. It's a bit of the daily grind. You know, I find for me the wreckage of my past is sort of still with me, you know, even at this stage. You know, I just started a permanent job in April, and I was sort of working through my using contracting gigs. So, you know, it's sort of just over 2 years, I was finally able to take a permanent role, and that was a new step up in responsibility. And I've just really felt that in the past 6 months, that the grind of showing up for life, you know, work responsibilities, you know, family responsibilities. And, you know, as an addict, I just really want to avoid that, you know, avoid things that are uncomfortable and, you know, do something fun. But, you know, what I've learned is you just have to sort of show up for the grind, you know, day in, day out. And in a way, that's where the miracle comes for me. You know, the miracle, you know, as an addict, I'm always looking for some sort of intense moment out there when, you know, all my dreams come true. But actually, the miracle has been in just consistently doing the little things. And I look around and I've slowly, you know, incrementally started building this wonderful life that I never thought was possible. And that's only through recovery. And, you know, I think one thing I'm learning in this phase of recovery is a lot about, like, finding my voice. You know, I'll come a little bit to my past, but, you know, in my childhood, it wasn't a safe place for me to sort of speak my truth or be heard. And, you know, I can really struggle with kind of how do I stand up for myself in an emotionally kind of healthy way. You know, I can either sort of just recoil and just go mute and just sort of avoid confrontation as a sort of avoidance mechanism or defense mechanism, because, you know, I'm, you know, scared of retaliation, or I can't be bothered, or I can really like be vicious and rage. And, you know, sometimes I don't know how to speak up for myself because I'm scared of myself. I don't know how I'll react. And that's something that's come up for me a lot recently with all these responsibilities and dealing with people. You know, can't sort of run away from that. You know, I have to. And one thing I've learned from recovery is that I don't have to be perfect. You know, it's just about showing up and doing my best and kind of trusting the magic of the program and a higher power. Like, you know, I know my meetings are really important. It's that's that rhythm to my life. You know, whether I have a good day or bad day, I know I'll come to my meeting and share about it. And that sort of keeps me safe. I always really feel really held, you know, throughout the week, because I know, you know, my meeting's coming, my recovery structure, you know, kind of bookends all the madness of my life. How did it all begin? You know, I'm not from this country. I was born in Australia. My parents were immigrants from Sri Lanka in the Civil War, and, you know, they moved to Sydney, and, you know, I was born a few years later. And, you know, there was some kind of sort of, and that there was some kind of interesting influences then in my upbringing. So I had your typical kind of South Asian immigrant family upbringing, you know, lots of cultural expectations, lots of pressure. Education was really prioritized, very aspirational. My parents really, really pushed us hard. You know, we had to sort of study. And we were given, you know, we were blessed with lots of opportunities because my parents were really motivated for us to seek. We wanted for nothing in terms of the opportunity to develop ourselves, but it was a lot of pressure. My parents were also sort of fundamentalist Christians to add to the cultural potpourri. So, you know, not only do you have the sort of cultural conservatism, you had the sort of the intensity of that, you know, those two kind of, I guess, they're both two different types of fundamentalist cultural influences that really fused together to make quite a kind of intense, really intense upbringing. And my mother was just a very, you know, emotionally volatile person, extremely controlling, extremely, you know, prone to sort of violent rages. You know, I mean, it's not my place to sort of diagnose her with what, but, you know, it was, you know, I always, as a kid, I just thought, it's just because she's like an ethnic mother, they're all strict. But I knew that there was something more fundamentally wrong. It wasn't just that my mum was Sri Lankan and a bit more conservative. There was a real kind of emotional violence, and I think a lot of my fear comes from that. A real kind of trauma in a way of sort of, you know, I just didn't know how she'd react, and always walking around eggshells. I can still, you know, still talking to her can, you know, can really get me scared. I remember when I really discovered using. Even when I finally moved to London, you know, all away from my family, I still had to sort of, you know, take drugs before I could face her on the phone or Skype. That was the kind of terror I felt. I think I was an addict from. I knew I was an addict from a very young age. That, you know, that deep sense of discomfort in myself, feeling like everybody else had the manual and feeling really awkward and like, you know, there's something wrong with me. So I didn't have a language for that until I came to NA. But, you know, that was always with me. But I actually didn't discover substances until much later. So I think my addictions, you know, my desire to escape manifested in other behaviors throughout my teens. Because my parents were so kind of strict, I kind of remember actually being a kid where I kind of knew there was this kind of world of chaos and darkness that I wanted to experience, but I almost made this deal with myself. I said, no, I'm going to study really hard and be the good, dutiful kid, achieve in high school, and, you know, when I get to uni and other stuff, I'll do it then. I won't sort of, you know, I'm not going to rock the boat now. It doesn't seem to be a point. And so I had my first beer at 18 when I went to university, and I was still pretty, you know, uni for me was a bit like sort of I would hope uni was going to be this great coming of age for me, but it wasn't really. So I was quite a high achiever in high school, went into a sort of a, you know, quite top university course. Yeah, uni, I still kind of studied quite hard and sort of tried to be cool and fit in, but didn't really happen for me. Somehow did well enough to land a job with a sort of a prestigious firm in London when I finished my degree. So that kind of catapulted me straight to London. And that was partly for me, I did that for my career, but also I think subconsciously I really wanted to, you know, escape the kind of controlling or the kind of familial pressure. It's almost, I needed to sort of leave the country, I felt, to escape. But, you know, as we find, you know, we sort of, you know, it's all an inside job. I still carried that fear with me. And yeah, like, and again, I came to using late, you know, even in the big city of London, you know, it took me to my kind of, you know, sort of mid to late 20s before I really sort of encountered sort of narcotics. You know, I was an addict in many other ways, but yeah, I really, and you know, it's sort of a progressive illness. I mean, I can't sort of track exactly, you know, I knew when I discovered drugs, there was this like, yeah, this is sort of, it was incremental. I mean, I think there was definitely a point where I realized this is sort of what I've been, this is what I've been looking for. You know, this is, you know, of all the kind of fixes or things that are out there to sort of kind of soothe the gnawing discomfort I feel, this, you know, this was, you know, we thought we needed something different. We thought we'd found it in drugs, and, I found it in drugs. And it's kind of interesting, you know, my using. I had a different relationship with all the drugs I used. I had a particular relationship with them, you know. It's kind of interesting. I remember when I first discovered drugs, I thought, oh, this will cure me of all my issues around like romance and sex, because like, I, you know, when I take drugs, I don't even care about that stuff. This is like, it felt like really spiritual, almost like I'm really coming into myself here. Like, I'm okay with myself. I'm not chasing. But that sort of didn't really last. I think it was really interesting for me. Using is using. I think all of us who've used drugs kind of know where it takes us. I think it's really important for me. I had two rock bottoms. I would say I had two rock bottoms in my using before I got clean. One was, you know, I used a lot of coke, and, you know, even though I was like a, you know, professional, ultimately I thought I was controlling it, but ultimately I kind of torched my career, ran out of money, all that kind of pretty much kind of reduced to sort of animal level living. That kind of, you know, it was a really visible rock bottom. And I had a friend who sort of staged an intervention. He took me to my first 12-step meeting. His wife sort of worked in the sort of the social services sector, so was aware of 12-step. So I went to my first meeting, and, you know, there was something about the honesty, I think, that drew me. But I didn't, like I said, I didn't get clean straight away. I thought I could control my using. I had this, you know, because of, I think with my background, the idea that there was complete abstinence didn't really make sense to me. You know, the idea that, you know, for me, any problem could be solved with the right combination of strategy and determination. You know, just like any other problem in my life, and I thought the same could apply to using. I just need to find the combo and try hard enough. And I thought I could sort of, yeah.
Are you
15? I thought I could find the combo, and it was my what's my train of thought here now? I thought I was discovering the combo, and I thought I could work this hybrid program. I didn't want to dismiss 12-step, but I thought I'll get some tips, you know, I'll go to the meetings and, you know, I'll kind of work this sort of hybrid program. And, you know, I'm conscious of time, but I'll just quickly say I was sort of committed to a degree, but unwilling to stop using. And then, you know, I thought I'll just put on a bit of a show for everyone, sort of, you know, I managed to get a job again, rebuild a few exteriors, got into a relationship with this sort of, you know, kind of glamorous older woman who was a bit of a throwback from the rave generation. And she didn't do coke, and she only did E's. And I thought, you know, I was sort of bamboozled by all the kind of new age, slightly yogi veneer stuff. And I thought, well, as long as I don't do coke and I just do E's on the weekend at these sort of, I don't know, you know, sort of, you know, kind of exclusive alternative festivals in the countryside, that's all right, you know. It felt spiritual. It felt, you know, Trace, I can see you laughing, because I think we talked about this once when I was coming out of that. And I thought, you know, this was a combination that would work. And, you know, this woman was almost certainly, you know, I mean, the question is, why was I drawn to that? I mean, she was almost certainly a sociopath. But then I sort of realized that was the rock bottom that I kind of realized, because it's like, why was I drawn into this? Why did I allow myself to this? Because it's like, ultimately, as much as I made excuses around this scene or that scene, I just wanted an excuse to use drugs. You know, I was a drug addict, and it didn't really matter whether it was coke with so-and-so in the city or a rave with, you know, the crusties. You know, I just wanted to use drugs, you know. And, you know, I'm kind of sort of, you know, I'm sort of at, but that, I think that was really important for me, because that was when the penny dropped. I realized, without a shadow of a doubt, if I use drugs in any form, I'm just going to end up a loser. the shape, how I'm a loser, the shape may vary. It may be loss of money and job or personal hygiene, or it may be the emotional pain of a toxic relationship, but you know, there I cannot win. And that was, I'm so grateful that I had stayed connected to meetings because I kind of knew where the solution was. That's why I was keep coming back, and I kind of knew the answer. And you know, it was already said what the formula was. I was willing to do the work. The man who's now my sponsor helped me break up with that woman, did my 90 and 90, and you know, I've stayed in the middle of this fellowship, you know, ever since that moment. And you know, thank you again for listening to me. I wish you all well on your journeys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.